My name's Mikey Whiplash, and you are listening to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Sarah Grieve here for Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet. I am with the one and only Mikey Whiplash. Mikey, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. A little cold and wet, but it's Glasgow, so I'm getting used to it.
Yeah. So, I do want to thank you to take the time out for joining me today, but I've got a bit of a generic question that I use to start off every single interview, because no matter who I speak to, it's never a generic answer.
Okay.
But what got you into wrestling, and why do you love wrestling?
I actually do find it is a generic answer. So I was like, oh, I used to watch it when I was a kid, and that was mine. For me, it was like, obviously I'm a lot older than a lot of the people that are usually on the podcasts and stuff. So I caught the tail end of World of Sport, and then into like the NWA before it was WCW, because they actually showed it where I was living, which was fantastic. Like, my earliest memories of wrestling were like Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat, but I then fell away from it and then got back into it just as the Attitude Era was starting. It was like 96, 97, and just loved it from there. It was like, it was just so over the top. Again, like at the time I would have been like 16, 17, so I was really into like punk music and like the new metal that was literally just starting at that point, and it tied in so much with what like WWF and WCW were doing. And it was sort of like characters like Raven and Saturn and Vampiro, where there was those influences between the wrestling, the culture and the music that really, really hooked me.
Well, like you said, that's a bit of a generic answer in general, but see, it's special for you.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I do love to ask everybody, because it's never generic when it comes from somebody. It may be a generic answer, but it's special to you.
Yeah.
Now, you did actually mention that this actually started out as a hobby, so what made you turn it into a career?
Blind luck. Like, with me, everything I've done in wrestling has been absolute blind luck. I got into wrestling, like actually training for it, because at the time I was playing semi-professional football, and I was also on the books for a feeder team for a rugby club, and I got injured, and I was like, I want to try and keep my conditioning up and stuff. And again, before we started recording, we talked about like people's attitudes towards wrestling, and you go, ah, well, it's fake, so it can't hurt that much. So I got into it under the pretenses of, this'll keep me in shape until I go back to rugby and football. The two ridiculous things was, the school that I went to, they did absolutely no conditioning. So it did not help in that way, in any way, shape or form. And then one of the guys who actually became one of my best friends, like in the wrestling business, from day one, his parents had said to him, like, you tell us what you want to do and we'll stand by you through it. And he either wanted to be a professional wrestler or a Formula One driver. And his dad tried pushing more towards the Formula One driver. By the age of 16, he'd already got like contact information for like Brian Dixon at All Star Wrestling. Like, he'd got contact information for like promoters down south. And he got in touch with Brian, and Brian was sort of like, yeah, come along to the local show. We've actually got a battle royal, so if there's a few of you, you can come along, have a tryout before the show, and if you do well, we'll put you in the battle royal. And my first show for Brian Dixon, I ended up being in a battle royal with WWF's Barbarian.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was like my introduction to All-Star Wrestling, and it just so happened to become like an actual career from there.
Right. Now, we all know that you're not actually originally from Scotland.
No.
No. But what actually influenced you to move up here and also join the team at Source?
Bizarrely, a girl. No, that's the thing, like, I happily talk about what I'm into away from wrestling, and I started dating a dominatrix up here. She was Jack Jester's valet in the early years of ICW, and she's also Viper's sister. So we started dating for about 5-6 months, and I was coming up like every other weekend. Basically what happened, by about the 6 month point, I'd gone away to do the holiday camps, and while I was on the holiday camps, we were just like getting like kind of really like spending time with one another, and we decided we're gonna move in together. But her business up here was making a hell of a lot more money than me wrestling. Mm-hmm. And again, wrestling, you don't need to be actually in a certain place to be able to do it. So I moved up here, and as I was saying, I think she actually went for a couple of Source training classes herself. Okay. But with Viper training at Source, mm-hmm. she had an in with Damo.
Right.
And that's kind of how that came about. And initially, it was just a one-off like seminar that mm-hmm. they brought me in for, whilst I was kind of bouncing backwards and forwards. And then when I moved up, Damo was sort of like, would you like to become a little bit more involved in it? And like, again, one thing led to another. Nothing was planned, and now I'm the poor sod that runs a training school.
Well, with all fairness, I don't think he would have had any doubt when he left for America that you'd be more than well, like more than capable of actually running the school. So,
oh, I don't know if you spoke to him. He's like this. A lot of people don't know. Damo's got a degree in psychology, mm-hmm. and he's like, you know, I would love to sit down and analyze you. Because I'm such a walking contradiction. And it's sort of like, but no, like, I think he knew I'd grow into it, if anything, mm-hmm. which I think's been the case. Yeah, oh, them poor trainees.
Well, like we said before we started recording, that I do know a few of the trainees, and they do say that you do put them through their paces, but they're very, very thankful for it. So, because the way that we say is Source make machines. That's the expression we all say.
Yeah. that has been mentioned even in the schools.
Well, there you go, it's catching on. But like you just said, you are actually like the head trainer. Now, so we do class Source. It's quite a quality training school. It's quite high class as well. So what would your advice be for anyone that would like to take up wrestling, even as a hobby or a profession?
Well, that there is it. Like, we've got an intake class coming up. Mm-hmm. And the amount of people that I have gained in touch that are in... like they're sometimes early, mid, late 30s. Mm-hmm. And like, I'd really like to do this, but is it too late? And I'm like, well, too late for what? Like, is this something where you want to be able to at some point wrestle like at a showcase or a community center or eventually like at Govan or Lennoxtown? Mm-hmm. Because we consider those two to be like our slightly bigger shows.
Yeah.
So are you trying to get to like BCW? Are you trying to get to ICW? Like, do you want to go to England and travel a little bit? Do you want to get to NXT UK? Like, depending on what your goal is, the concept of is it too late is varying. And that's my thing with my trainees. Like, every now and again, I'm like, so what are your actual goals? Because I'll push them accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I've got a base level what I expect of everyone.
Yeah.
But then it's, like, Joe Hendry spoke about it. Like, he's getting a tryout and all the rest mm-hmm. of it. Like, Joe came in on a regular basis away from the classes. And if the classes were, like, being pushed to level 3 with the conditioning, the drills and all the other stuff, he was going up there at, like, level 8, 9 and 10. And that was his personal choice because... Joe wants to be one of the best wrestlers in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So the main thing is just sort of like working out what your goal is and then setting a path to get to it. Someone was telling me a couple of years back, there was a woman, she went and trained at Progress's old training school right. when it was the Projo. And they turned around and went, she was probably one of the most naturally talented performers mm-hmm. to come into the school. And she debuted on one of their trainee shows and then finished. And they got in touch and like, what's happened? And she's like, well, to be honest, like I went through a messy breakup. I wanted something to take my mind off it and I set myself a goal to wrestle on a show.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrestled on the show and I've got no dreams or aspirations to do anything more than that. And that was her thing.
Right.
It's like she wanted to just have that one match in front of a crowd and then she walked away from it. When there was people there going, you could actually do something with this. But that wasn't her goal. So set a goal and then set out an actual route to accomplish it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I remember I spoke to Dickie Divers not that long ago as well. And he just says to obviously find a respectable school as well. Because
yeah.
like, he really fell into the trap of maybe going to a less respectful school.
Right.
I think it was up in Dundee, he mentioned, and then he came down to Source.
Okay.
I was spoken to Sam Barber. He said that he started out at Source, trained really well, thought it wasn't for him.
Yeah.
Went away, and then he started at GPWA. It's all about finding the school that fits for you as well.
Yeah, so like again, Joe Hendry will tell you like what he did, because he knew where he wanted to go, what his goal was. Mm-hmm. He went and looked through each school. I think there was only two at the time, like in the Glasgow area.
Yeah.
Then there's a couple further up north. But he went, who has had the most tryouts? Like, who's had the most guys go to, like, say, Japan or this, that, the other? And it was actually Damo who pointed out to me recently, was like, for, I think it's 9 years straight now, Source have sent trainees to WWE tryouts.
Yeah.
And that's what Joe Hendry saw and went, that's what I need.
Mm-hmm.
There are other people that want to, like, obviously wrestle for ICW, mm-hmm. and a more clear route for them would be go to GPWA.
Yeah.
Like PBW, they do the holiday camps.
Mm-hmm.
If you speak to like Krieger or Looking Shaw, them holiday camps, what made them? Like if you look at the way they wrestle,
yeah,
it's so different than from the GPWA
yeah.
and the Source trainees.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just finding what works for you.
Yeah. I think that's probably one of the most important things. Now, you started out as a full-time wrestler, well, started as a hobby, progressed,
yeah.
but now you've started taking the leads in training upcoming talent,
yeah.
and also taking your hand at promoting. So, Source are now doing their own shows
yeah.
with the talent from the school. So, you're basically now a triple threat within the wrestling industry. You can wrestle, you can promote, and you train.
Yeah.
So, how was the transition, though, from going from just wrestling to then training and wrestling to then promoting and doing all three at the same time?
So I was lucky with the training aspect of it, because it was slowly like it was like done like in small steps.
Mm-hmm.
So like obviously with Damo running the school, he'd bring me in like for the odd seminar originally. Then I'd do a class once a week or once a month or something, so I could slowly find my feet.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's funny because backstage at shows, wrestlers, and I was like just as bad for it myself, where we'd sit there and go, oh, the promoter's doing this wrong, or the promoter's doing that wrong. And until it's your money, and until it's you having to do it on either a bi-weekly or monthly basis, as a wrestler, you never really appreciate the stress of booking and promoting a show. It's like, I've never made no like bones about the fact that me and Dallas have had numerous fallings out. And a lot of it comes down to like the way in which either the shows ran or the way it's booked. And then this time that I've come back, like I've been in back just under 2 years now, and he's like, mate, it's been a complete, like working with a different person. I'm like, yeah, that's because I've now been the guy that's had to stand there and pretty much physically count how many people are in the crowd
yeah.
to make sure that things are covered.
Mm-hmm.
Like, also, it's the man management side of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, I'm notorious for being difficult to deal with. Like, I am my own worst enemy in so many ways. And then when you have to try and man-manage 20 people that are like me, it's not easy. And it's kind of like the one similarity with the teaching and the promoting. With the teaching, you have to approach every single trainee differently because some people can take criticism quite easily. Other people, not so well, they're quite thin-skinned, and you have to kind of go around the houses and say it in a certain way that it doesn't make them feel like they're completely inadequate.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with the promoting side of it. There's some people I can walk up to and go, you didn't do this, or I needed that. Then there's other people you have to kind of go, right, I'll put my kid gloves on, and after approaching a completely yeah. different manner. Like, promoting, like, I was actually talking to Scott Cassidy after the Motherwell show, and I was like, because at one point he'd helped out with Fierce Females, and I turned around to him and was just like, he's like, listen, I didn't realise just what that side of the business entailed until I started doing it. Because like when Fierce Females was running like 3-4 times a year, it's not that, well, it's difficult, but it's not as difficult as like November just gone, and I had like one Fierce Females, 3 short sore shows, and then I was wrestling on shows as well.
Yeah,
I was like, I thought I was going to be bald by the end of the month. But speak to Scott, I'm like, yeah, I've got a complete new appreciation of that side of it. And it's kind of strange because he's trying to learn the wrestling side of it.
Right.
And I'm trying to learn the promoting and the business side of it. So that's the big thing for me right now. It's murder.
Well, I was going to ask you, how is it obviously when you're just doing all these three different things, but like you just said, you thought you were nearly going to be dead by the end of the weekend, so I can only imagine.
Yep.
I kind of don't want to be in your shoes right now. Now, we have seen a couple of comments online. We've had talent getting signed exclusively to companies now.
Yeah.
And we have seen your comments. I don't know if it's a bit of a joke, or maybe.
Oh, and everything with me is a joke.
But seeing now that we've had talent getting signed exclusively to companies, what is your take on the British wrestling scene right now?
There's two different ways to look at it. Like, with wrestling, there's always going to be a unique perspective. For me, it's fantastic for those guys that were, like, for lack of a better term, in the trenches for, like, the last 10, 12 years. And they were wrestling in them working men's clubs and community centres and in front of like 20 and 30 people, and they were busting their arses to make them 20 and 30 people go away and tell their friends.
Yeah.
And in the next show, maybe 40 or 50 people turned up. There are a lot of people, like when wrestling was big in the UK in the mid-2000s, it wasn't because of the British talent. It was because of how big the aggression era had become. So generally, the British market was becoming reliant on what the American promotions were putting out. And then we'd have to go, we'll use this as a marketing tool to get people into our shows. And that's why you'd get so many former WWF, WCW, TNA guys on shows. Because you put them front and centre and go, this is what, it's very similar to what you've just seen on TV. Whereas now, we can turn around and go, Pete Dunne, Tyler Bates, Trent Seven, Joe Coffey, Mark Coffey, Wolfgang. And this was even before the NXT UK thing.
Yeah.
You look at like a company like PBW, because they've been running their towns for 12, 15 years, they've got a good history with those areas.
Yeah.
And that's because of the Wolfgangs and Lionhearts and Red Lightnings and Jack Jesters and Kid Fights and Liam Thompsons. And again, a lot of them names there aren't under contracts.
Yeah.
Or if they are, it's not necessarily with the company everyone associates with wrestling. But we've now actually built up that sort of like that good faith with the fans. They're not relying on Wrestler X from brand this from year 2006 anymore. Obviously, there are some fans that are turning around and going like, oh, these people are selling out and all the rest of it. I've made no bones about this in the past on social media. I've pointed out there's been 2 points in my life whilst wrestling where I've been homeless. There's been numerous points where I've had to go like 2-3 days without being able to eat. Yeah, the fans will then turn around and go like, oh, you're selling out. It's like, well, no, I can now put food into my cupboards on a daily basis. I can now pay the rent on a property and all the rest of it. Or there are guys actually buying houses off contracts now.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not selling out. That's a guy that's dealt with all this adversity for X amount of time, and it's now paying off. So there's that. And then you can look at it now and go, again, in Glasgow alone, you've got Source, GPWA, you've got PBW. Then over in Livingston, you've got Reckless Intent. Then further afield, you could sort of like talk about like W3L in Edinburgh. There are companies up in Aberdeen with WrestleZone.
Yeah.
Then you can go south of the border. Like, and once you get south of the border, there are so many reputable training facilities now. Future Shock in Manchester, there's the Knuckle Locks Gym in London, Dragon Pro in Newport, over in Ireland with OTT and Ulster wrestling are doing, and there's the Fight Factory and stuff like that. There's all these schools, and now these guys are being signed to contracts, and they're being told possibly that you can only work for set promotions. You can only maybe work with these people. There's now guys like Kieran Kelly and Leighton Buzzard, and there's Jason Reed from over in the east of the country.
Yeah.
There's Damien, who got into the Drew Galloway tournament.
Yeah.
Like, that boy's been wrestling, I think he's 10 or 11 years now, and he's just getting a break. But then you go down to England, you've got like your Drew Parkers. There's a lad from Newport named Bino. I saw him do a 30-minute match with Mark Haskins and did not look out of place against him. You've got so many lads coming through down in progress. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I've been a big advocate of what ISW have been doing the last 6-12 months. Mm-hmm. And that's because Wolfgang, Joe Coffey, Mark Coffey, Kenny Williams, all these others can't be there on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So there's the pros. Like, the cons are, now you don't see these guys on the posters. That local market might go, is this the same wrestling? Because I'll always say, like, whether it says Source, PBW, BCW, SWA, the very casual fan doesn't notice the initials.
Yeah.
They just see wrestling. And then if they don't recognise the people that are on the poster, they might assume it's a different product. So there's wins and there's losses to it, but that's pretty much how it is with everything.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what I was going to ask you as well, going forward, not only as a trainer, but as a promoter, do you believe this actually gives the newer talent a chance to take the British wrestling scene forward?
Oh, definitely. Like, I actually mentioned it to my trainees a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. When you look at the most recent Govan show that we did, like, the most experienced wrestlers on there, I believe, were Lewis Gervin, Aspen Faith, and Sammy Jane.
Yeah.
And then there's Yum Yum as well, as David Devlin.
I was going to wonder who Yum Yum was there for a second.
But aside from that, it was a combination of Source, PBW, and GPWA trainees.
Yeah.
And again, that's something you see now, where there's GPWA trainees on PBW shows, there's Source trainees on PBW shows, there's PBW trainees on Source shows, and we're all working together now. Mm-hmm. Whereas maybe 10, 15 years ago, everything was very insular for each school. And because a lot of the guys that are now teaching had to deal with that sort of, like, oh, you can work for us, but you can't work for them.
Yeah.
That's gone out the window now, and it gives a lot more opportunities to the younger guys.
You see, that's what I love. It did come across as quite clicky to begin with, and now it's evolved with the times.
Yeah.
It's not just because you've had to, it's because it's the way forward.
Yeah.
Because, so, like, you've seen, this year alone, you've had Kieran Kelly make a big impact on ICW.
Yeah.
When he was just brought in as a referee, and, like, see, when he came through for that match, I went, holy crap, that's Kieran Kelly from Source.
Yeah.
And it was like a sort of sense of pride, because you're like, that's one of the new guys sort of finally breaking through.
Yeah.
That, honest to God, I think he'll have the Zero G by, like, next year at some point.
Well, like, I always compare it to, like, football. There's no better feeling than it's like, where there's, whether it's Celtic or Rangers or whatever other team that you support. Most of my friends are Celtic fans, so I've got a better understanding of that. So I compare it to sort of like when there's that small percentage that go to the academy games as well as, like, the bigger games. And when you see someone like Kieran Tierney go from the academy to the subs bench to starting 11 to now captaining the actual team, and then he's in the Scotland squad as well now, while he's in the Scotland starting 11.
Yeah.
And you see that progression through. As a fan of football or as a fan of Celtic, can you see that?
Yeah.
There's a certain sense of pride in going, that's what the Scottish football scene has just done.
Yeah. One thing that the guys wanted to ask you is, what was your inspiration for your character for Legion? Like the face paint, fishnets? What was your inspiration?
So, prior to Legion, again, when I first started in ICW, the character was based around a transvestite.
Right.
So I'd already got the fishnets, and I was wearing just regular women's makeup. My ex-fiance actually made a joke about it on social media a couple of weeks ago, where it was sort of like, more of her clothes were in my wardrobe than because what it was because she was like, she was the one that actually introduced me to Mark Dallas.
Right.
Like, she was kind of my in with the Scottish wrestling scene. And like, Dallas is like, yeah, we want to bring you in and we want to do something with you, but we don't want to do the boots and trunks because we don't think it'll get over with right. our fans. And then you compare it to what I'm actually doing now.
Yeah.
but it's like, I want to do something different. And at the time in France, I was doing a transvestite gimmick, mm-hmm. but it was all pink and furs and baby blues and feathers and stuff like that. And Dallas is like, I like it, but not the colours. And it's like, you want something really dark and gritty. And it was like, my ex-fiance turned around and was like, we've got an entire dungeon downstairs with like PVC and leather and rubber and latex mm-hmm. and all the rest of it. We can get something from there. And then it was like, I took the break from ICW. In that break, me and Tommy became like really good friends.
Right.
And it was through me and him talking that the Legion character came up. And like, I've always been about trying to keep my character progressing forward mm-hmm. because the moment that you kind of get settled in what you're doing, the crowd can be quite fickle and get bored of it and then turn on it.
Oh yeah.
So my stuff progresses more or less on like a 3-month basis. Something evolves. Mm-hmm. And I was like, right, I'm not coming back doing the exact same thing. So looking at the Sumerian Death Squad, and a lot of their stuff was based in, like, obviously the religious stuff, and that's what yeah. where Legion was going. But they were also very much influenced by Scandinavian death metal. So that's where, like, the corpse face paint came right. from and things like that. And then a lot of the actual character, there's a lot of me actually in there. Because it's kind of funny, because on Saturday night at the garage, mm-hmm. Dallas made a comment and went like, called the crowd a bunch of goth sympathizers. And I'm backstage and I'm like, that was all me get up. And I'm like, I'm not a goth. But like, I make no bones about that. I hate the concept of labels. Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of the problems in the world is because we're too busy trying to segregate ourselves. Mm-hmm. into minorities. It's like we've got this tribal mindset going back from Neanderthalic era, and it's still going today. It's like moving up here, like, it was strange because, like, say, Celtic versus Rangers, mm-hmm. then it's Glasgow versus Edinburgh,
yeah,
then it's the East versus West, North versus South, Scotland versus England, and there's this tribal mentality, and that's north and south of the border. Mm-hmm. But I hated the concept of like labels of going, oh, he's a goth, or he's an emo, or he's a nerd, or he's whatever. And that's like I was saying before we start, like, I can be a walking contradiction at times, where I can be the most positive and motivational person going when it comes to the trainees. And I'm always going, if you don't try, you'll never know. But on the same note, I'm so self-conscious about me. And so I put across this really big, like, great personality of being this confident, egotistical, like, arrogant arsehole. And I'm probably the complete opposite. And it's like, recently I got invited to do a catch wrestling championship, like, world championship. And I turned it down. And it was just purely because I shat the bed, basically. And I was talking to Joe Hendry, and he was just like going, because obviously he'd done like the Commonwealth and stuff. Mm-hmm. He's like, why didn't you go for it? I'm just like, I didn't want to fuck up. I didn't want to make a mistake. And you can see that in a lot of like the character as well. Mm-hmm. Like, especially this year, I've tried actually put a lot of that sort of like self-doubt in there. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to humanize the character a lot more. So again, it's why fans are starting to actually connect with what I'm doing
yeah.
as an actual babyface. Because mm-hmm. like in the past, I've basically, my old Mikey Whiplash character was very much the face that I normally put across when I'm in box and stuff like mm-hmm. that. People will not approach me because they're scared of me. And the amount of times that you see people go like, oh yeah, he is so scary. And I do that because I'm antisocial. I'm not good at talking to people. Mm-hmm. Like the amount of times where like there's people I kind of know and they come up to me, and I'm like, do I shake the hand? Do I hug them? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I really struggle with social cues at times
right.
and knowing when it's the right thing to do, mm-hmm. what to do. So it was a lot easier to be the stoic, don't come and speak to me.
Yeah.
Because I then don't have to deal with it. But no, so this year, like, even like when we did like the tease of the retirement in mm-hmm. July and stuff like that, that was just sort of like me starting to actually put those bits of self-doubt in there, because again, I've covered it in interviews before, where when I was meant to do my return as Legion, I was 100% sure the crowd would be dead silent when I came back. Even when I came through the floor, through the canvas, mm-hmm. In the Stevie and Renfrew match,
yeah.
I'm like, I'm not sure how they're going to react to this, because I've got so much self-doubt in mm-hmm. me as an actual performer,
yeah.
that And I'm like, so I'm going to use that and have it to some, the fans can actually go, yeah, I feel and I understand that because we all have it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll be honest, like, there are times where people go, why do you do, like, death matches and stuff mm-hmm. like that? It's like, you are a, like, top-class wrestler. You don't need to do that. And one of the reasons is I doubt so often that a crowd will, especially an ICW crowd or an adult crowd, will not react to me doing wrist locks and headlocks and stuff like that. And I know if I go through a table or barbed wire or use chairs, that's going to get a reaction.
Yeah.
And it's that level of self-doubt where I just go, right, I know this will work. So I'll just do this because that's not, I was going to say that's my safe zone, but it's not that safe. But that's like, so a lot of that Legion character is just different aspects of me. Like saying before, Damo, who's got the qualifications in psychology, mm-hmm. he's like, I would love to sit and psychoanalyze you because I'm convinced I've got sort of like some kind of bipolar, multiple personality. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, you literally just talked about death matches right there, which leads me on to my next question, because on the road to Baromania, you issued a deathmatch invitational
yeah.
to whoever was able to beat you would then be able to jump in on your championship match with BT Gunn. So you had four challengers, actually, over three different locations.
Yeah.
So you had Aspen Faith in Edinburgh, Jimmy Havoc in Glasgow, God forbid, I don't know how you made it through that. And then you had Drew Parker and Clint Margera down in Newcastle.
Yeah.
So what was actually your opinion on each different challenger and how they did when they challenged you?
Yeah. Again, before we went on air, like, obviously I made the comment about certain fans talking about, like, how they felt the Newcastle match was tame or underwhelming. I'm fully aware that sort of, like, when it comes to death matches, there's only one person that I will not get into a, for lack of a better term, a pissing contest with when it comes to how crazy I'll go, and that's Jimmy.
Oh, yeah.
And I know with me and him, we'll push it to a level that we need to push it to. And I don't think there's anyone else that can top what Jimmy does.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, we wanted it so Jimmy was going to be the final match.
Right.
So it would have escalated yeah. and built. And it was meant to be three singles matches. And we were trying to, I think it was like, I don't know if it was Drew, Clint, then Jimmy. Because they were like the three established, mm-hmm. like, deathmatch guys yeah. in the UK. And again, Drew was the newer one.
Mm-hmm.
Clint had a little bit more history mm-hmm. behind him. And yeah. then obviously there's Jimmy.
Yeah.
So we wanted to plan it that way. But sadly, we're all independent contractors and
yeah.
with bookings and stuff. And the only day we could get Jimmy was for the middle one.
Yeah.
So that's why we went, well, let's do the last one as a three-way. And then between the three of us, we'll hopefully compensate for Jimmy because
mm-hmm.
that's how nuts Jimmy is.
Oh yeah.
And then for the first one, it was sort of like, again, I've been a big advocate of trying, like, give people opportunities
mm-hmm.
and like Aspen put it best himself when he did a promo after the actual match, and it was sort of like, Stevie's been in RCW since which was day one, and people know what he can do. And then when you talk about women's wrestling in Scotland or the UK, you've got Kaylee.
Yeah.
And then between Lewis's zero G runs and like his matches with like Ricochet and guys like that,
yeah,
people are fully aware of what Lewis can do.
Yeah.
And then there's Aspen.
Yeah.
And you're like, we don't really know that much about Aspen.
No, but that's true. Because watching that show in Edinburgh, that was probably the first time I ever saw Aspen properly step out of his comfort zone.
Yeah.
So I was actually surprised myself of the bumps.
Yeah.
First of all that he took. So I was curious on that.
Well, again, like he pointed out, it was like that was his first singles match in ICW in 3 years.
Bloody hell.
And the last time was on a Spaceballs show.
Yeah.
So it had gone from like down here on a Spaceballs show to then being in Edinburgh, going through like a barbed wire like table and stuff like that. But I was really happy with like all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like with the Aspen one, it felt like it was kind of like his sort of like, look at me. This is Aspen Faith. And if you look at sort of like the difference between him in from that match going forward, his confidence levels had just gone through the roof.
Absolutely, yeah.
And they actually, when he did the promo afterwards, they turned around and went, you can talk. And you could literally go back and you can draw a line between that match beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Lewis did the talking.
Yeah.
Afterwards, they kind of split it between themselves. And at times, Lewis actually would go to Aspen, you run with the ball. And then again with the matches, like he got a lot more like confident. With the Jimmy one, like it was the first, like I'd said before, there was things that we wanted to do at the Hydro for the King of Insanity that health and safety wouldn't allow us. So we pretty much went into that one and it's just like, yeah, the stuff that we weren't allowed to do at the Hydro, the garage aren't going to be fussed. They are fussed now.
Yes, we heard about them not being happy about cleaning up the glass post-match.
Yeah.
I mean, Quacko still had glass shards in his hair. I drove back to Edinburgh with glass shards in my hair, still from that show.
But, like with that one, it was sort of like Jimmy had gone, like, how dirty do you want to get? And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, you know, like, do you want to keep it at, like, the kind of level we normally do? Or do you want to push it into, like, the CZW tournament to death stuff? I was like, let's go for it. Because there was a point at the Hydro where I wanted to use, like, have you ever watched much deathmatch stuff?
No, because it makes me sick, right. Really. So, it traumatises me.
So in Japan, they've got a thing called razor boards, and it's basically the, you know, the cutthroat razors, what you can replace?
Yes.
It's them on boards.
Oh, no.
And I did engineering before I got into wrestling, and I looked at it and was like, I could make those. And Jimmy just went, no, no. So when Jimmy said no to something, I was like, I think I finally got Jimmy on something. And then now he's been announced figuring out Japan the start of the year. And I'm like, you said no to me on this stuff and now you're going to Big Japan. And then the Drew and Clint one, what made that one so, like, again, you'll notice through the three matches, I introduced different things that you wouldn't have seen before.
Yep.
So like it was the glass at the garage.
Yeah.
And then even after that, I had to beg and plead to be able to use the barras, in retrospect, probably. But then at Newcastle, we used the spider web.
Yes.
Now, for me, I use them matches as well as like a tester to see how things set up. And A, we made the bar, like the spider web, way too big. Because it was so difficult to get into the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing was, I was like, right, even if it was smaller, once that's in the ring's off limits. So that's why we used the spider web outside the ring at the barras.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in retrospect, that's probably one of the worst bumps I have ever taken. I was expecting the spider web to kind of act like a trampoline and take up some of the slack, and it didn't. I just went straight through to the floor. But no, I honestly know the three-way could have been a lot more than what it was. Again, one of the issues was because it was outside of Glasgow, the logistics of taking things down to Newcastle wasn't the easiest.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying like I was, oh, I'm not happy with that match, because there were still people going, holy fuck.
Yes.
But it could have been a lot more than what it actually was.
Well, I mind you saying before we started recording that you were also carrying a few injuries as well, so...
Yeah. Well, that's what annoyed me the most, because like a lot of the times you don't see the things. So Clint actually gave me a Death Valley driver off the ring apron, and we were meant to go through a table. Clint went through the table.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah.
So like my hips were out of alignment for like a fair while, but for about 3-4 days afterwards, I couldn't even get out of bed.
Yeah.
Because my hips weren't working.
Well, we'll finish talking about your death matches because I feel post-traumatic stress from the barrel lands right now going through my head. But you have wrestled in a lot of death matches, but you're also one of the most gifted technical wrestlers that me, personally, that I've ever seen as well.
Oh, thank you.
So, but which style do you prefer?
It depends what day of the week you catch me on. As I said there, like, sometimes when I do them death matches, it's because I question my own ability as a wrestler, and I know going through this or getting hit by that is going to get a reaction, where there's other things in wrestling
yeah,
I question myself on. But I'll be honest as well, like there's points when I do them death matches, and you'll see the same thing with Jimmy as well. Like, we're very similar at times. Like, our mindsets at the time can dictate like what we actually do. So like, there are times like I absolutely hate myself as a human being, and I use them kind of matches as a way of sort of like, you deserve this, you're an absolute terrible human being and this is what you should get, kind of thing. Again, generally when you see Jimmy in like one of his fouler moods, that's when he starts busting out the silly stuff,
right?
And it's the same with me. It's sort of like, I always compare wrestling to like someone's regular job. Like, it was actually Dean Ambrose gave a really good analogy of it on the WWE Network, where it was like, when you go into work on a Monday after a really good weekend, you don't want to torture anybody. It's like, you just try and get through the day, and then Wednesday, hump day, again, it's sort of like, you just try and, if we can make it to the Friday, then we've got the weekend.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing, like, there are some days when I'm in a really good mood, and you can actually see it when I'm wrestling, because there's a little bounce in my step and the way I interact with the crowd. And then there are other times where I'm like in a really, really bad place mentally. And I'm just kind of like so focused on what I'm doing in the ring. And you'll, like, if you watch some of the matches, you can actually see it just from my demeanor in the ring. It's worrying.
Right, so in July, Angelico was brought to ICW for Shugsy's party. It's common knowledge that you have worked with them outside the ring.
Yeah.
And that you are good friends with them.
Yeah.
So could you tell me what it was like working with him both outside the ring and when it came to him coming to ICW?
It's funny because like, I've dealt with him in three completely different environments now. So I initially met him in South Africa. I was over there doing TV tapings, and I was initially working with PJ Black, Justin Gabriel, but Angelico was there as well. And one of my first interactions with Angelico was after he'd almost just been kidnapped by Nigerians. So when you get one into one of them situations where it's like, like we were just pulled up like at gunpoint at like a set of traffic lights. And it was only the fact that it was a Nigerian wrestler that was driving. And he'd convinced the Nigerians that were trying to kidnap Angelico that he'd already kidnapped him, that he got away. So that was kind of like one of my first introductions to Angelico. And then Angelico travels all over the place. So he'd actually lived in England before he'd moved back to South Africa.
Yeah.
So he was sort of like, at one point, like, I'm thinking about coming over to England for a few months. Could you put me in touch with All Star and get onto the holiday camps? So we'd gone from him being held up at gunpoint in South Africa by a group of Nigerians to us now being on the holiday camps with Butlins, Redcoats, and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And that's when we actually started wrestling one another. And there's actually, I think there's a couple of matches on YouTube of mm-hmm. me and him.
Yes.
And if you watch it, it is so pantomime. But, like, again, there are certain guys that wrestle at All-Star. And again, they know what spots will get a reaction.
Yeah.
So they do them every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas me and Angelico always want to get better. So we always change the spots and
yeah.
do different things. So you'll see all this, like, pantomime stuff. And then right in the middle of it, we bust out some ridiculous indie spot in the middle of a holiday camp. And the crowd are going, what the? And then so we went from that. And then obviously he managed to get booked to ICW.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we've gone from held up at gunpoint by Nigerians to trying to do indie spots in front of like holidaymakers.
Yeah.
And now we're doing hole for hold wrestling in front of probably one of the toughest crowds
yes.
in the world.
Yeah.
But that just shows how diverse he is as a performer as well.
Yeah.
Like he said to me, he's like, everyone remembers him for them two dives that he did in Lucha Underground.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now trying to educate people to what he can actually do.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I fully understand that. Because people forget, like, before I did the death matches, I was doing all the technical stuff.
Yeah.
The amount of people, again, that label me as a deathmatch wrestler now. And I'm like, I'm not a deathmatch wrestler. I'm not even a technical wrestler. I'm a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
I can do the vast majority of it.
Yeah.
And that's what he's trying to do now. So that's why we did the style of match that mm-hmm. we did. Again, I'm sure a lot of people went, oh, he's a luchador. He'll probably come in and be doing all the mad head scissors yeah. and stuff. But if you watch Lucha Libre, you've got the maestros that are more than apt when it comes to the technical wrestling. So that's what we wanted to showcase in that match. And I was like, if I'm not coming through glass, I am more than happy to do that.
Well, see, I did actually expect that Nigerian gunpoint story from about that. I did not expect that. So I'm actually, now that's got me wondering, have you got any other stories like that, obviously, with people that you've worked overseas or even closer to home?
I've got loads. Again, it's this thing that's like, again, other podcasts that I've done, like I told one. After I told it, I've kind of just gone, I've said it now. And it's absolute filth. And I kind of start, every now and then you see someone looking at me kind of going, something wrong with him. And there is, there's something seriously wrong with me. But no, it's hard for me sometimes to sort of like remember an individual
yeah.
story. There's so many things that used to happen in wrestling that we would not get away with now.
Right.
Because it'd be perceived as being bullying or
right.
going too far and mm-hmm. other things. Like one of the things I say to my trainees is like, I can be very sarcastic at times,
mm-hmm.
but in doing so, sometimes you can see like the trainees' heads kind of go, like they drop. And I'm kind of going, listen, if you can't cope with me, you will not survive in a wrestling changing room.
Yeah.
Because it's like, if you play sports or you play anything where there's a group of you together,
mm-hmm.
even if you're out with friends, there's always going to be that point where someone takes a shot at somebody.
Yes.
And if you can't take the shot,
mm-hmm.
you are screwed.
Oh, yeah.
So we jokingly call it character building. No, it's not bullying. It's character building. But the amount of things that, like, especially with All-Star, that I had to do. And if I said it now to someone, they'd go, that's so out of line. Like, there was one. This one isn't filth, so I can get away. there were times when we did the Butlins holiday camps.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian didn't like to ask for too much of the staff. So he'd ask for the bare number of rooms. And sometimes the bare number of rooms were for just for the imports and the important wrestlers. And I was still classed as a young boy then.
Right.
So I didn't have a room. And like, there's points now where I see wrestlers complain if they have to like sleep on someone's settee or on a floor or something like that. I've had to sleep on the beach before in Minehead because there was nowhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a point where when I did start getting rooms, the older guys who had to done this themselves 15 years ago were like, what you do, keep hold of your keys and then go round at night with your keys and see if any of them have still got the curtains open.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they've got the curtains open, chances are no one's staying in them that night. So I had like an entire pocket in my bag, just full of keys. But there was two or three of us like that.
Yeah.
So there was this one night, and I'm walking around, none of my keys were any good, and I saw a chalet with its window open, but the curtains were open, there was nothing in there. So I'm like, right, screw it. And at this point, I was about £240, and the window was no bigger than like the average toilet window.
Right.
And I somehow managed to squeeze through and get into the chalet. It's like, right, okay. So I barricade the door just in case someone turns up. And I've got an ironing board wedged under the door.
Okay.
So it's about 3 a.m. I hear someone try and open the door. And it's the holiday makers had turned up late.
Right.
I'm asleep in the bed. And they're trying to get in. I felt like Goldilocks. And I can hear them outside going, there's somebody in there. And I'm like, oh, shit. It's like, go get security. And I'm like, oh, shit. So whilst they're trying to come in through the front, I'm trying to put my underpants on because like, I sleep like in the scud. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to put my underpants and everything on whilst trying to get back out through this window on the other side.
Yeah.
And it's stuff like that where I kind of go, people don't realise how good... Again, we talk about how well the British wrestling scene's going now. If you turned up to a show as a performer and a promoter turned around and went, oh, there's no accommodation for you tonight, everyone is just like, what? Like, whereas back then, it was just... like common practice.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was one. Me feeling like Goldilocks with the three bears and me half naked trying to climb through a bathroom window.
Well, for any of your trainees that listen to the show and maybe have not heard that, I think they're in for a treat.
No, I think this is the thing, like, I forget so many stories. They actually, like, again, as much as the character building goes one way, it's a two-way street. And the amount of times I'll go, we'll go for food after a show, and I'll go, oh, I've got a funny story. And the entire table just stops, and it's like story time with Whippy. But like, every now and again, I go, oh, I've got a funny story. And someone will put on like the Stoke accent and go, oh, I've got a funny story. And I'm like, touche.
Oh, dear. Well, see, we've talked a bit about your time in ICW, but we're going to come back to talking about Source.
Okay.
Because that seems to be like your baby right now. That actually is. Yeah, it's kind of like your baby. So, you are the head trainer, and earlier this year, around about July time, you decided it was time to crown a champion of the actual brand and the school. And you held a tournament, a three-day tournament, which was such a success, an absolute success. And it was Alexander Darwin McCallum.
Yep.
And I'm going to make sure I say that name right because he listens to the show and he'll probably come after me. I'm not going to deny that. He will come after me. He was now the champion.
Yeah.
Right, he won the entire tournament. But following the success of this tournament, do you maybe think there could be another one that you could possibly run?
Well, this is the thing, like, with Source, I kind of pride is on the fact that, like, we've got a group of singles guys, but we've also got, like, the tag teams as well.
Mm-hmm.
I've also made a point a couple of weeks ago where I was saying, like, I love trios.
Yeah.
Like, OTT and Fight Club Pro have made it a big part of their brand to have, like, these trios. If you look at, like, OTT's, like, contender shows, they can build, like, entire, like, shows around these trios. And for me, one of the good things about trios is I can give a match 12 minutes, but instead of it being two guys given that time period to get over, there's six people.
Yeah.
And it means I can rotate things like around.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now, I've got Kieran Kelly, Craig Anthony, and David Devlin.
Yeah.
Who are basically begging and pleading with me to start doing like full-blown trios.
Right.
And then, obviously, with the tag, you got, like, KOE.
Yes.
But they've been doing the odd six-man with Sean Walker.
Yeah.
And it's hysterical.
Oh, yes.
And, well, Sean Walker in general is...
He's hilarious.
Yeah. But, so, whether it's a tag or a trios or something along those lines, I'm a massive fan of tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you've got like standalone shows.
Yeah.
It's a very easy story and narrative to explain. It's 8, 16, 32, or however many people, and they've all got this one goal, this one aim. Yeah. At the end of it, it's so simple.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can build more intricate little stories mm-hmm. within it. Again, I love the majority of wrestling. I can mm-hmm. sit and watch Mexican stuff, can again, obviously sit and watch the deathmatch stuff, but like my big thing is Japanese wrestling.
Right.
I love Japanese wrestling. And whether it's Old Japan, New Japan, Dragon Gate, like even like companies like Zero One, Noah, their entire calendar is based around like the G1 Climax, yeah. the Tag League, the Juniors tournaments,
mm-hmm.
like, and you can see how well it benefits them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fully aware Source is nowhere near on that kind of scale, but it's one of the things like, again, with ICW,
mm-hmm.
I always say it's like Dallas, I'm like, why, like the Shugs weekend, why don't you have a tag tournament that runs through it?
Mm-hmm.
And the main event for your first night is the heavyweight belt.
Yeah.
Then the main event for your second night is the tag tournament.
Yeah.
Or the zero, like a zero G tournament, yeah. something like that. And it gives the fans a narrative to follow over the two nights. And I think that's why I did the 3 days,
mm-hmm.
because it gives things time to breathe as well.
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes when it's like 8 people, it gets rushed a little bit.
Yeah.
We did it with 16, and you could see even once like Sugar went out of the tournament,
yeah.
he had a story and a narrative over the 3 days.
I've got questions about that later. Don't you worry.
But yeah, no, at some point there will be, whether it's a tag tournament mm-hmm. or a trios tournament or something, that's something I want to do down the line.
Yeah, because something else I wanted to ask you is, during the tournament, KOE infamously yep. brought out their Source
yep.
tag team titles. Now, that was probably one of the most hilarious things I'd seen.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, those two are very highly entertaining.
Yeah.
So I want to wonder what was going through your mind when you first of all saw those paper plates.
Again, like as I was saying, it's like I love all kinds of wrestling.
Yeah.
But my thing is sort of like trying to make it make sense within the what you're, as me as a promoter and mm-hmm. booker, is trying to present. So I love Chikara. I love Chikara wrestling. I love DDT. But if you try to put a Chikara match onto a New Japan show, it sticks out like a sore thumb. Like, the context doesn't translate. So I give my guys so much freedom mm-hmm. in what they can do creatively, but they're fully aware that there's, as much as they can think outside the box,
mm-hmm.
there's a bigger box what they've got to try yeah. and stay within. Again, that weekend there was dance-offs and
Duck Duck Goose yeah, as well.
Yeah. And as long as, I always feel like as long as it doesn't make the fans feel like they're being taken out of the moment,
yeah,
it's fine. I've seen guys try run like slow-mo spots on shows where there's kids.
Right.
And the kids don't get the concept mm-hmm. of the theatrics of it.
Yeah.
And it gets lost on them. Whereas, like, again, that tournament weekend, it was very much internet wrestling fans that yeah. were there. There was the odd kid, but there was nothing there that made you go, it was too overly ridiculous.
No.
But I always try and push the guys to be creative in whatever yeah. way they are. Like, you look at, like, we say about Alexander Darwin McCallum. If you look at his promos, like the one he did for ICW.
Yes. Oh,
it's sorry. Like, they were talking about, it's like, he'd never wrestled in ICW before.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, like the vast majority of the fans will not have any clue about his character.
Yeah.
Yet that thing got over 5,000 views.
That was incredible.
Yeah. Then there's other guys that have wrestled for ICW for 5 years and they struggle to get 1,000 views on their stuff. And I said it myself, the promo I did for Joe Coffey, our match, Joe only put his promo up on the Saturday, so I had to scramble to rebut.
Yeah.
So I'm literally sat with just a white wall behind me and all the rest. Normally my promos hit sort of like 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 views. That one got under 2,000.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite clearly I haven't had the time to put the effort in
yeah.
to do all the stuff. And if I don't put the time and effort in with my creativity, why should the fans put the time and effort in to actually watch it?
Yeah.
And that's the thing, like, with them belts, it may have taken them 2 minutes to make them belts, but they went out of the way to make it, and the fans appreciate it.
Well, see, I think all of our reactions sort of said it all, because me and some of the others from the team were actually there throughout the whole weekend covering it, and I don't think we could quite believe that they actually went out of their time to just go and make these wee belts. Yeah. So it's like, it was a nice wee touch, though.
Yeah.
And that leads me to ask, would you ever consider actually introducing proper tag team titles?
Well, that's the thing, like, if I was going to do a tag tournament, mm-hmm. I'd like it to have something at the end of it. Kind of, it's when I thought, bragging rights are great. It's like, oh, we won a tag tournament. Mm-hmm. Where you can stand there with actual, a physical manifestation of, this is what we won. Mm-hmm. It means so much more.
Yeah.
Again, we've got a lot of more than competent tag teams in Source, and it's, again, gives me more stories that we can play with as well. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, I loved, again, I was talking about this the other day, where Ring of Honor, like Ring of Honor through their, like their peak point in the early to mid 2000s, if they knew they were building up a world champion who wasn't quite what the fans would perceive to be the top guy, mm-hmm. they'd go and stick the tag belts on the Briscoe brothers, because the fans automatically went, they're the best tag team in the world. Mm-hmm. And then the title match would drop down the card and the tag belts would go on last.
Yeah.
And they were doing all the stuff with like the Motor City Machine Guns, Speed Muscle, like the guys from Dragon Gate and stuff like that. And then once the belt went on to, like, Bryan Danielson, they then moved the belt down onto, like, the No Remorse Corps, who they were building up. So it's something I could do the same with, where it's like, if I give, like, one of the younger lads the main belt, mm-hmm. I can then put the belt onto, like, the Polos.
Yeah.
And it's like, right, that's my main event until the crowd take to that person.
Yeah.
Well, that's my thinking on that one anyway.
Well, everyone's got their own way of thinking about it.
Oh, yeah.
As long as it works. And if not, you can only learn from it as well.
Well, again, the good thing with like the Glasgow scene right now is all the different promotions have got distinct different ways of mm-hmm. approaching things. Like Kid Fight will tell you himself, his product is aimed very much so towards families and children.
Yeah.
BCW aim theirs towards the families, but they'll have that one import in to try and draw like the internet fans. Whereas I've got my own mindset on how I think wrestling should be put across, whether it's serious, comedy, technical, high flying, all mm-hmm. the rest of it, but it's distinctly different from the other promotions. So we've all got our own unique way that we put things across.
Mm-hmm. Right, we're going to finally talk about Sugar.
Okay.
Right? I can see the wee smile on your face just now. So you were the one to basically introduce us to Sugar Dunkerton. He did say that in an interview that me and Kwaku did with him a few number of weeks ago, where he couldn't put you over highly enough. Like, he loves you to pieces. Like, pretty much, he does actually love you to pieces, and thanks you so much for bringing him over and taking a chance on him.
Yeah.
So what actually made you want to take a chance on him when he was sort of trying to get over into the Scottish and British wrestling scene?
Again, I'm not going to turn and go, oh, I'm a student of the game kind of thing. I'm still a wrestling fan at heart. As a wrestling fan, I also, again, like earlier I used an analogy comparing wrestling to football.
Yeah.
Like, as a promoter, you're more or less like a football manager. So sometimes you have to look at your team and you go, what is this team missing? And for that tournament weekend, I had all the serious stuff. Mm-hmm. I had the tag stuff on day three with KOE and the Hunter Brothers.
Yes.
I had the big man stuff with Andy Wilde and Rowan Frey.
Mm-hmm.
I had the high flying with Speedball and Solar.
Yes.
And I was like, I need some lightheartedness in there. But again, I'm a firm believer, like, as much as there needs to be lightheartedness in there, the guy needs to be able to perform as well. So there are numerous wrestlers in the UK that are fantastic entertainers,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't feel like they would have fit in with the product that I was wanting to put across. Sugar was the guy that ticked so many of them mm-hmm. boxes. Like, he'll tell you himself, when he was in the US, he felt like he got typecast and labeled as a comedy wrestler
mm-hmm.
because of the stuff that he'd done in Chikara,
mm-hmm.
and he was trying to reinvent himself, mm-hmm. and that was part of him, what he was doing coming over. And seeing the stuff that he was doing, I was like, that's what I want. I want that guy who, again, pushes it right up to that boundary of funny, but it doesn't cross over into that point where it's insulting, like, the fans' intelligence.
Yeah.
The Duck Duck Goose one, they told me what they were doing before they went out, but I didn't know what Duck Duck Goose was.
All right.
I don't know if it's a Scottish thing or if it's just...
I think it is. Yeah. A lot of us played it in our childhood, yeah. so it's a big, like, nostalgia hit.
So they're going like, oh, we're going to do Duck Duck Goose in there. I thought it was a wrestling spot.
Right.
Because, like, there's things in wrestling where performers will give it a name.
Yeah.
So instead of going in the ring, this, you just go this. So someone, like, would have gone to me like, oh, we're going to go Duck Duck Goose. If I was in the match, I'm like, so what's the spot? It's like, no, it's not a spot. We all sit in a circle. And I'm like, okay. But I think that was probably the closest to it pushing it just over there. But again, the five other guys that were in the match, because of their characters, it kept it just the right side of the line. And again, it ended up being a perfect setup
for the
next day. And then everyone knew exactly what they're going to get from that match.
Well, I don't think Quacker did, for that matter. So obviously, the whole Sean realising that he's not actually from the hood and that he's a white ginger man, and Quacker was used to the visual aid, which I do feel quite sorry for Quacker.
Yeah. Like, this thing, like, I'm the first person to sort of, like, have a laugh and a joke and stuff like that with the fans. I'm terrible. I don't have a filter. I'll say or do things, and it's not until after the fact where I go, oh. And then with that one, even I was kind of going, oh, please take this in the right... Please take this the right way. Please take this the right way. And in fairness to him, he did.
Yeah.
Like, I even tried to, like, have a little laugh with it at Lennoxtown, because it was just like, Lennoxtown, all these little kids were fist bumping me.
Yeah.
So I fist bump everyone and then get to Quacku, and like, Quacku does that, I'm like, no. And shook his hand, and he's like...
He was very confused that day. Yeah. But yes, well, how do you feel about Sugar's obviously surging popularity? He finally made his debut in ICW in Aberdeen, along with Aspen and Lewis. I don't think he was more happy than him, actually. He was very, very ecstatic for it.
Oh, yeah.
I think he was a bit gutted that he wasn't actually on the Hydro card, but I think he's got his eye on the square goal.
Yeah.
Would you like to see him in the square goal?
Definitely. Again, like, because it was funny, because, like, when I first mentioned him to Dallas, he just kind of went, well, isn't he just like Grado?
Oh.
As in, like, with the entrance and all the rest of it. And I'm like, no. It's a completely different thing. Mm-hmm. Again, the sort of, like, it's a label. The moment you get labeled as, like, a comedy wrestler.
Yeah.
Grado's so much more than that. Mm-hmm. But that's what he gets typecast as.
Yeah.
And then Sugar's got the same thing. It's like, so automatically you go, well, they're in the same box. They're in the same pigeonhole. So if I've got Grado, why do I need Sugar? It's like, no, he goes about it in a completely different manner. Mm-hmm. And then when Dallas finally saw him, he went, oh. But no, like, for me, when I was a tall star, Brian Dixon used to always go to me, he's like, wrestling should be a three-ring circus. You should have your acrobats, you should have your clowns, you should have your strongmen, you should have the lion tamer. So there should be that semblance of danger, those feats of strength what leave people in awe, those acrobatic moments where people go, did he just do that?
Yeah.
And then there's the clown. And I'm not saying, like, Sugar's the clown. He actually manages to sort of, like, fit into two or three of those categories and does it seamlessly, where other people can do one and it's a bit clunky going into the next. But no, the more Sugar, the better.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't actually put him in the pigeonhole of a clown, basically. He's extremely charismatic, and he knows exactly how to make people laugh. I mean, I don't even think he tries to be funny half the time. He just is. He's just naturally funny. Like, the several different times that I've seen him, I've seen him in the Source Tournament, I've seen him against Sean, I've seen him play Duck Duck Goose, I've seen him in the Zombie Survival match with Gene Money.
Were you at Reckless?
Yes, I was at Reckless as well, assuming your species.
Yes.
How was that?
Well, again, this is the thing, like, Paul, like, pigeonholed me as, like, a deathmatch wrestler or a technical wrestler. If you'd have been at Reckless and Temp for that show, you're kind of going, it's almost like, you know, they're in that Spider-Verse film, mm-hmm. and it's like all the different versions of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That's pretty much me. There's so many different, and it's like, we had a completely different outline to what we were going to do in that match. And then one thing happened in the match, and I just went, let's go with it.
Yeah.
But no, and again, that's just sugar being sugar.
So I want to ask that Source had a fantastic year in 2018. What have you got planned for 2019?
This is the thing, like, I'll always say to the students and the guys that like wrestle for us, is that technically Source has only been going for just over 2 years now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people will compare it to like GPWA and PBW, Reckless Intent and other promotions, because they automatically go, well, SWA and Source and well, we had to start from scratch. We had to try and find venues that we could run. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of bounced around a dozen or so to try and find the right ones.
Yeah.
Because like the funny thing is, like with anything entertainment wise, you go, oh, well, there's a very big populace here, like a big population, so mm-hmm. we should do well with this. And then you draw like 30 people.
Yeah.
And you go, what's different from here to here? And you never really know. Mm-hmm. It's like we could do Mount Vernon and get just under 100 in.
Yeah.
And then we went to Burnside, which is like 2.5 miles away.
Yeah.
And we barely hit 50. And we did the exact same marketing. We did the exact same sort of like talent were on the shows.
Yeah.
And it worked on one, didn't on the other. So it's like the last 2 years has been about us trying to find our venues.
Yes.
Now we've got his venues, we're trying to like build on them and then trying to maybe expand slightly. Like I'm possibly going to be running like one new venue next year out of Glasgow.
All right.
And that's partly down to because of how well Lennox Town has done.
Yeah.
And it's like one of the reasons Lennox Town works is because we've got absolutely no competition entertainment wise. Mm-hmm. Like, people go about, like, I said, it was like, you're right in the city centre of Glasgow, you're the only wrestling promotion, you should be doing fantastic.
Yeah.
It's like, but it's entertainment, it's not just wrestling. So at the same time the wrestling's on, there's the theatre, there's the cinema, there's restaurants, there's theme nights, there's bowling, there's comedy clubs. So they're competing with that. When you go out to Lennox Town, it's that, there's nothing else on. There's not a train station for, oh, we can jump on the train into Glasgow and go and do something. So we're trying to do the same thing there.
Yeah.
But that's the big thing for 2019 for us.
Right. And you've also recently released the 2019 dates for Fierce Females.
Yeah.
So I do want to ask, what actually influenced your decision to create a promotion out of Fierce Females instead of just keeping it as a division like what most other companies do?
The big thing for me was like, I actually ran one show just before I moved up here.
Mm-hmm.
And where I'm from, there's All Star, and that was it.
Yeah.
The company where I actually learned how to wrestle and train had closed down, so I ran a show in that area. And I was like, moved up here, I'm like, well, I'd kind of like to promote every now and again. But then, at the time when you looked like, there was like SWA, there was PBW, BCW, ICW, there was, and again, at that point, SWA were running a lot more shows.
Mm-hmm.
They did like Cumbernauld, Canvas Lang, so many places. And it was like really oversaturated. And I was kind of like, I'd like to do something. And I was actually going to do like a Chikara style thing where it was like Joe Coffey wanted to do a character where he was a clown. Yeah. Yeah. And this thing, like what a lot of people don't realize with Chikara is it's like it's wrestlers, you know, under masks, being given a chance to do something that they wouldn't necessarily do.
Mm-hmm.
But I just couldn't get it to click right. And then ended up working a match. It was a handicap match with Kaylee and Carmel for ICW. And I got out the match and went, Jesus, these girls can really go.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if they had a platform, they could really do something.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when the light bulb went off. And I was like, well, there's Kaylee, there's Carmel, there's Sarah, there's Nikki, who I obviously knew about from SWA. Courtney was coming through. There was, at the time, Jayla Dark when she was working as...
Bet Noir, was it?
I think it was before Bet Noir. She had a different... Like, she's changed the name so many times. Like, I'm convinced it's some kind of tax relief scam. But no, like, them first Fierce Female shows that we ran, two-thirds of the roster were actually Scottish.
Yeah.
And it's only been recently, like... One of my things now with Fierce Females is Viper and Kaylee do so much of stuff in ICW. I'm like, Raoul, if people want to see them wrestle, let them go see them wrestle in ICW.
Yeah.
If you want to see Jayla Dark versus Addy Starr, the only place you're going to get to see that in Scotland is Fierce Females.
Yes.
Again, Sami Zayn against Raven Creed.
Yes.
Again, it got done over an OTT, but there's no chance you're going to see that on an ICW show anytime in the near future.
Yeah.
So for me now, Fierce Females is like the girls that are up here that aren't perceived to be the top end talent, because I feel like ICW is bottlenecked in the sense that it's almost impossible to get through into that same tier as Kaylee and Viper. There's the ongoing comment now of Ival and Casey. It's like, how many times can they wrestle each other in ICW? I think they've done it five or six times.
Five or six times, I think we've seen it,
Yeah, and it's like, there was a point in Scotland where you always saw Kaylee versus Carmel, or Carmel versus Sarah.
Yeah.
And now it's become Ival and Casey and Viper and Kaylee Ray. It's them same matches. So, yeah, at least you know when you go to a Fierce Females, you're guaranteed to get something different.
I mean, that's what I love. I mean, you've not only got girls that are on your doorstep. I mean, you've introduced people like Anastasia and Emily Hayden as well into the mix. Now, Emily's feud with Sammy Joe has been something else. And that's not something that I've been able to see elsewhere.
Yeah.
So that's what I do enjoy when going to Fierce Females. And like, you've had like Debbie Cattell make her debut and become like the new internet champion as well. So that's what I've personally loved about it. And I can't wait to see what's happening next year for it.
Well, that's how I think, because we've managed to like announce this full five dates. In the past, it's kind of gone show to show with a rough idea of what's going to happen on the next show.
Yeah.
Whereas this year, I've already got ideas of who and what I'm going to do. Well, who am I going to use and what am I going to do in the December show that we're going to do. So now I can actually, like you've seen there, the little storyline between Emily and Sammy.
Yeah.
Like, it's only been a small thing, but it's been something that's kind of been
building up and ongoing for a good few shows actually. Yeah. So,
and the other good thing is it's they're not having to wrestle each other every single time, and it's like that's good where it's like I can put Sammy on with Ruby Radley, and then it's Anastasia and Emily, but it, both matches progress the feud away from those two matches.
Yeah, I also did like the, it was the Irish Invasion that's got going on right now. That's something I'm really interested to see because the OTT girls are killing it right now.
Oh, yeah.
And bring them over here. It's been absolutely, it's been really fun to watch, actually. Didn't quite see Debbie turning and go over the Irish ones. I was like, wow, that's a bit of a shocker.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to seeing what's going to happen in Fierce Females. Like, I travel through from Edinburgh every time to come down and see because I just, it's something that I actually do believe in and I really love it. But I want to ask you, what has been some of your proudest moments as a trainer?
This is the thing, like, I completely forget sometimes some of the stuff that's actually happened. Because, like, I've been teaching on and off now for 14 years. Like, what a lot of people don't realise is there's a company in Wigan called Grand Pro Wrestling.
Right.
I helped out with a couple of guest seminars. I went there with Rob Brookside and with Chris Hero as, like, the assistant trainer. And they brought me in as a regular trainer for a set period. So I helped like Joey Hayes, Danny Hope, CJ Banks, like and a handful of others. So it's been that long that I've been doing it. I forget some of the things that have happened. And it was actually when the promo that Joe was cutting on Saturday night, I'd completely forgot a large portion of some of that stuff that he'd said.
Yeah.
And things like that, like him, Joe, Mark Coffey, Nikki, Damo, like helping them get to where they are.
Yeah.
Like that's fantastic for me. But then the flip side is there's kids that probably aren't ever gonna get that far. But when I see them walking in through the door day one, I go, this is going to be a struggle. But then when you finally see them wrestle in front of an actual crowd,
yeah,
I get more out of seeing somebody debut in front of 20 people than see, say, Joe on Impact or Damo on SmackDown or Nikki on NXT. It's like, there's a lad coming through now. Like, he's on the main show, like our main shows.
Yeah.
And I think in 12 months, everyone's going to be talking about him because he puts my character stuff to shame.
Right.
At zero.
Right.
And
yes.
Right now, if you'd have met him 2 years ago, you'd have gone, he will never, ever get to like where he is now. But he's at the point where there's lads who are like at the school going, why aren't you pointing forward for ICW? Because he's that good.
Yeah.
Like his work, his promos, like his character. Mm-hmm. Like he scares me sometimes. Like I was doing a promo with him one time and I'm like, Red, you ready to go? He went 2 seconds and he went 3, 2, 1, 0. And his character, and I went, oh, that's creepy. But when you talk to him about like his influences, like his body mannerisms and stuff, he goes, have you ever heard of a guy called Andy Serkis? And he's like, yeah, that's where I base me movements off.
Right.
And it's like, he's like the motion capture guy for like Gollum, King Kong, Planet of the Apes. So he's gone and actually watched a guy whose job is to do motion capture and based a lot of his movements. And like, he's 23, I think. And he's phenomenal. But when I met him, I was like, oh, it's going to be tough. Because he's so quiet and reserved.
Yeah.
It was so difficult to get a conversation out of him. I'm like, how am I going to get you in front of a crowd?
Yeah.
And have you react? And then he goes, zero. Right. Oh, okay. But it's like guys like Zero, Dalen Hendry, Manlin. I've got all the time of the will for those guys because nothing against like Joe Hendry, Joe Coffey, Mark Coffey, Jackie Polo. These guys are athletes. Like they played rugby, they did like judo, they did all this stuff before they got into wrestling. These other kids have got sort of like social anxiety, all these other things, and they've fought past them and they can now go out in front of like 100 people and do what they do. And that's the stuff that I'm proud of, seeing them do that kind of thing.
See, that's what I love to see as well. Now, I do want to quickly ask you, what have been your best and worst moments of 2018?
Best? See, I'm terrible because it's funny, I haven't actually heard it yet, but apparently Tommy had done like an interview the other day and he's like, talk about like how he finds it difficult to like himself or like anything that he does. And one of the reasons why me and Tommy are so close is because we're so similar.
Right.
And I'm very much the same. And it's like, there's matches that I've had and people are going, that was phenomenal. And I'm going, it could be better. There's promos that I've done and people have gone, that was phenomenal. And I'm like, could be better. Again, people in the mask are like, what's the best match you've ever had? It's like, I haven't had it yet. And I doubt I ever will.
Right.
Because the moment I actually put a point of going, this is the best match that I've had, I'm either always going to be trying to beat it instead of just trying to have the best match that I can have that day. But I think with regards like best moments, it was sort of like maybe, I think it was not the garage show on Saturday, but the garage show before.
Right.
There was a point where I was looking around in the dressing room and there were so many Source guys in there. And I'm like, shit, me and Damo have done okay. Because like when you look between like, say, Polo Promotions, Joe Coffey, Joe Hendry, Kieran was there, Alexander Darwin McCallan, and so on.
Yeah.
Like, and then there's still guys like Craig Anthony.
Yes.
Like, he's another guy that if he isn't on ICW shows by the end of next year, something's gone really wrong. I think my biggest low was probably going to be Barramania.
Right.
And that isn't so much of me getting hurt. It was the moment when I was backstage. Like, there's a picture of me and you can see I'm like, and everyone thinks it's sort of like the blood loss and all the rest of it. But there's a moment where I looked around and realised just how many people were upset about what had actually happened.
Yes.
And again, like, as I pointed out numerous times, I was like, I don't have a lot of confidence in me. So I actually don't feel like a lot of people actually either like me as a person. Because again, I'm quite opinionated. And one of my things is like I'm very honest. And it's like I'm as honest with me as I am with everybody else.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't like that honesty. They prefer someone who just says, agrees with what they're seen doing. So I honestly thought that a lot of people either didn't like me or didn't care for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I look up and I see how many people are visibly upset by what's going on, and that's down to me. Because again, that was a point where like, I really didn't give a shit about me. And as much as I don't care about me at times, there are other people that do.
Mm-hmm.
And my actions that I do regarding me have adverse reactions with the people around me. So I think that was probably the biggest low, probably, but just not for the reason most people would expect.
Right.
So we get injured, but it's the moment my actions have consequences for other people. It's like anybody who turns around and says that they're not flawed as a human being is a liar. There's no such thing as perfect. I've got more flaws than most. And luckily, I've now realized that the vast majority of people accept those flaws to an extent and go, well, you're aware of it, you're trying to do something about it. And it's instances like that where I realize my flaws can affect other people. Damn, that got deep.
Well, the final question I want to ask you before we do round this off is, what is next for Mikey Whiplash?
I honestly don't know. At the start of this year, I actually was fully prepared to have finished with ICW by now. And a big part of that was wanting to focus more on Source.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, as we've pointed out numerous times throughout, I'm pulling myself in so many different directions right now. Even traveling away from Glasgow, I was very against. It's like, if you actually look at how many shows I've done outside of Glasgow this year, it was a major drop off from last year. But then I went and worked like for a company like Chaos down in Bristol. And I went down there and like I got on really well with the guys that run it, the lads that are on and the girls that are on the shows. And I'm like, I still love doing this stuff. But there's a point where I have to go, yes, I love doing this stuff, but it affects what I'm doing with Source.
Yeah.
I can't put the same time and effort that I want to into it. So there's going to be a point where I've got to go, do I want to wrestle for ICW? And do I want to wrestle down south? And do I want to do all this other stuff? Or do I want to try and push Source as a school and as a promotion onto the next level? So right now, I still want to wrestle. But every other month, especially when show days are coming up for Source, I'm going, why don't I just quit? Why don't I just stop wrestling for all these promotions and focus on Source?
Mm-hmm.
So like the other thing I have to look at is, I'm no spring chicken compared to the majority of the wrestlers. Up here, guys like Red, Lightning, and Lionheart, and Wolfgang are classed as like the veterans of the Scottish scene. I'm 5, 6, 7 years older than some of those. And I've got sort of like 11 years of camps wrestling on my body as well. And that's not detrimental to them. That's just me going, I think I've probably had well over 5,000 matches now. And a big portion of them recently have involved me taking silly bumps or going through things and other such stuff. So next year, it's kind of up in the air at the moment. Just have to wait and see, I suppose.
Right. Now, I did warn you before we did actually go live that we round this off in true Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet style fashion with some quickfire questions. So, clear your mind.
Okay.
Rock or Austin?
Austin.
Trish or Lita?
Trish.
Night in or night out?
Night in.
Cody or Omega?
Cody.
Xbox or PS4?
Neither. I don't play computers.
I was gonna say your favourite wrestling game as well, but
that would be WCW versus NWO World Tour.
Wow.
Yeah, when all the Japanese wrestlers.
Your favourite wrestler of all time?
Barry Windham or Bobby Eaton.
Your favourite wrestling pay-per-view?
It would have to be I'd probably go with Wrestle Kingdom 11.
Right.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Which was Ibushi Nakamura? Was that 10 or 11?
I don't remember specific dates. I just remember matches.
I'm the same. That's the thing, like, if someone says to me, like, oh, which is your favourite WrestleMania?
Yeah,
the one with Austin and Bret, which is 13.
I couldn't tell you again.
Yeah, that's me guessing. But yeah, to be the Wrestle Kingdom where it was Nakamura and Ibushi.
Right. Your favourite tag team?
Midnight Express.
Okay. I do apologise for this next one. Kieran Kelly or Alexander Darwin McAllen?
Oh. Oof. Oof. I'm going to go with Kieran Kelly just because it's all noise. Alexander Darwin McAllen.
I can't wait to see what happens with this thing. Your dream opponent?
The general one I always go with is Minoru Suzuki. Like, and so many other people go, oh, I really want to see that match. But there's so many. Like, Masato Tanaka was over this weekend, and I'm like, oh man, imagine the match I could have with Masato Tanaka. But no, Minoru Suzuki.
And finally, for sentimental purposes, the favourite venue you've wrestled at?
It'd either be the Victoria Hall in Stoke-on-Trent, because that's where I did my first All-Star show.
Right.
Or Colston Halls in London, which is where a lot of the World of Sport stuff was taped.
Right.
And it's where you see a lot of the Johnny Saint and Carl Sanders and Steve Gray matches.
Right.
So one of those two. Up here, the Classic Grand.
I do love that venue. Well, that rounds that off, and I do apologise for the Kieran Kelly ADM question.
I don't. If it's a noise ADM, it's great.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining me, Mikey.
Oh, no, thank you.
You can catch Mikey on ICW shows, Source shows. You see him running Fierce Females. You can pretty much everywhere we can find you, actually. It's funny enough, we can find you everywhere. So, yeah, thank you so much for joining me, and we hope to see great things for you in the future.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much.
Listen, cunts, I don't care what the fuck you think you're doing, whatever you think is more important with your life, you honking bag of tips. You know what you should be doing? You should be going online, you should be subscribing, you should be listening to the back catalogue of Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet, whatever the fuck you're doing, that's what you should be doing. I don't care if it's your mum's birthday, I don't care if she's feeling contractions, get on it right now!